Welcome to Close Playing. I'm Tevis Thompson, and in this episode, I'll be talking with Liz Ryerson about DreamWeb. Liz is an artist, musician, game designer, and critic. Her 2013 game, Problematic, brings together all these roles and offers players an experience that is at once intensely abstract and deeply personal. The game we discussed, DreamWeb, is a cyberpunk adventure that was first released on DOS and Amiga computers in 1994. It broke with a number of adventure game conventions at the time, and was unusual in its graphic, though extremely pixelated, depictions of sex and violence. In our conversation, edited here for length, Liz and I discussed our very different reactions to DreamWeb, what effects an unreliable narrator might have on a video game, and a broader question of how we, as players, should approach older games. Welcome, Liz. Thanks for talking to me.
Hi.
Hey. I don't think a lot of people listening might know DreamWeb. I had never heard of it when you suggested we talk about it. So before we kind of get into us playing it, what did you know about the game before we started?
So I had this blog Tumblr called Lost Worlds. Uh-huh. And I was just basically trying to find strange video game worlds, strange like kind of like things that have basically over time kind of like, you know, people don't talk about them anymore or whatever,
right.
And just like
right.
things that like look cool specifically for, just because like there's a lot of weird video game stuff out there, but not a lot of people know about this stuff.
Sure.
And there are some other people who do that kind of stuff on Tumblr, but anyway, I started and I just kept looking at random YouTube videos. And, you know, there are a lot of point-and-click adventure games mm-hmm. from, like, the late 80s, early 90s. And this one really stood out to me, I think, because of, like, the interface of it.
Mm.
But I found it just from, like, watching a long play. You know, it came up in YouTube-related videos. And I didn't think about it for a while, but it looked kind of interesting mm-hmm. just because it, like... And then I heard that it was supposed to be really dark. So I got kind of more interested, but then didn't think about it for a while. And then I was watching a YouTuber, who talks mostly about adventure games. Her name is Pushing Up Roses. yeah. And she mentioned it in one of her videos and there was clips of it and it was like really kind of some of the gory deaths and I was kind of intrigued.
Right, right.
I think I liked her videos specifically because they mostly talk about point-and-click adventure. She mm-hmm. likes it, so I get to hear mm-hmm, from a mm-hmm. person who likes that genre, mm-hmm. you know, what is interesting about it. And there are some outliers and all that kind of stuff. But as far as, like, things that are set up like DreamWeb, I have not seen anything else like that.
Mm-hmm,
and that
mm-hmm.
is exactly why I was interested.
Sure, sure. So did you find when you actually played it that you had more patience for its adventure gamey elements?
No, hell no. No, the problem was, so this game, like, I looked at the reviews at the time, and it was pretty poorly reviewed, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit sad, because there's so many really interesting ideas there, but what most people, so there's, like, the expectations of most people at the time versus the expectations of people now,
right,
and
right.
the expectations of people at the time was, like, there was a lot of those like goofy logic puzzles where you had to combine objects
mm-hmm.
and if you were able to pick something up, usually it had some
right.
use.
Right.
In DreamWeb, you can pick almost everything up and
right.
look at it and that's kind of cool, but it doesn't really add something to the game most of the time.
Doesn't it create a little anxiety because you can only carry
yes.
so many things? So like the ability to pick them up just made me worry more and more, even though, you know, it was interesting that I could, and that the game remembered when I put something down, you know, there was this persistence that gave it a kind of reality to me that was cool.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, like, you know, I expected when I started playing the game, like, oh my god, you know, I'm supposed to keep all these things in my inventory,
because right.
you never
me
know,
because
that's the thing with these kind of games. But that's not the thing with DreamWeb,
right.
And I think, like, maybe once you know that becomes a little easier. Usually mm-hmm. it puts things that you need on like a crucial path, but
right.
I mean, it still has some of the adventure game problems. But
right.
anyway, I think because people expected that, And they also didn't like maybe the setup of how you're moving. Like they didn't like the top-down thing and the little magnifying thing, which the magnifying glass thing can be... maybe we should like back up and explain like the mechanics of this game.
Sure.
And like the story and everything.
Sure. Do you want to... I mean, the overhead perspective that you're talking about, so we have a... visually, the first time I played it, it looked closest to Hotline Miami from recent games.
Yeah, there are some other games with that perspective, but there are not that many.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one game when I saw Hotline Miami, I thought of this game called Mission Impossible for the NES that has a very similar perspective, or like Metal Gear, the original Metal Gear, or like
I thought of Metal Gear, yeah.
Or, yeah, so, like, there's some games like that, but, yeah, it's not that many.
And the magnifying glass is weird because on some level, because some of the items are so tiny, you kind of need it. But it also, by bringing those graphics, magnifying them, it makes them weirder to me. Like, it creates this weird, you know, like, the representation of the object becomes even, like, I don't see it more clearly. I guess I can differentiate pixels easier, but it doesn't make it like, you know, I'm seeing the object more clearly. It just makes it more abstracted or something. I don't know. It's just that I found the magnifying glass at first one of the most fascinating visually things for me. I would just, you know, drag it around just to kind of get a second look, you know, and it was strange.
Well, yeah, I'd say... so, you know, they had a relatively small world. The screen is pretty small, and then there's the giant character portrait, which was like a hallmark of like a lot of Amiga games, it seems like.
Oh, really?
I think they were, you know, trying to solve that problem, and it's like, it's hard to see stuff, so let's give you a magnifying glass. But the real problem with that is, one, like, they don't, because of like needing to make things look realistic to some extent, although even though it's a sci-fi like cyberpunk game, like because of needing things to look realistic, like if you need to click on a panel or something to open a door, like it's often hard to see that.
It really is.
And like you can't just click on the door and open it because like it wants you to have that level of realism or immersion, but it doesn't actually add anything. So that's like one strike against it. And the other one is just there's too much stuff in the environment. There are too many things you can look at and read descriptions of, which makes the magnifying glass also kind of useless. It just because it makes you want to look around for clues or look for something that's like hidden or something, but you never really need to do that outside of like searching for door panels or like where you can exit the room or that you can like enter a window that like is broken, but you can't really tell exactly because the visual style makes it hard to see that. Like, if that was fixed, if they didn't need to make it realistic and they didn't make you have so many objects, like they made it just a little bit more obvious like what you were supposed to, because like there's no like real, like there's only a few, well, there are, I guess, are a few puzzles, but there's like no real like super hard adventure game puzzles in
they're not like combining, you know, like things, you know, this kind of lateral thinking or anything. There's not any kind of weird combinations, really. They're fairly straightforward as long as you have the right items from your past of, you know, collecting.
Yeah. Things. So like they just didn't, I don't know. They could have made what the critical path just more obvious, highlighted it, made it slightly less realistic, but it would have smoothed out a lot of the problems and made it a more pleasant experience.
Yeah, I think that's why the magnifier was one of the early points of interest to me, because it didn't work very well functionally. It wasn't very useful to me. And yet, I found the perspective generally interesting. And so, I don't know, I would just... It kind of was a way for me to play around and just, you know, because there's not a... For all of the items in there, there's not a great deal of interactivity. There's not a great deal you can really do. Magnifying and making, you know, the realism the game's going for kind of estranged a little bit. Maybe I was just trying to entertain myself because also my patience would run, you know, would wear out a little bit.
Yeah.
To me, one of the things about playing, you know, this is the, so for the other podcast, we talked about fairly modern games. I have some older ones in mind, but I'm really interested every time I return to an older game to replay it, or, you know, something totally new to me like this, really feeling out that distance and feeling out like, wow, you know, I remember being at various times when the cutting edge was such and such. And then feeling that, you know, just a few years later become almost ugly, and then a few years later than that, it becomes a kind of style that you couldn't see at the time. So that, you know, it, the realism or that whatever it's maybe going for there, that's kind of lost whatever achievement it did in the number of items that were there or the way they were depicted. That's really lost on me, and lost, I think, on most people who would play it now.
I have the exact same problem with a similar game that may or may not have been inspired or have been inspired by DreamWeb. Deus Ex 1, like, when, like, Warren Spector or somebody talks about that game, they're like, oh, well, the revolutionary thing we did is that, you know, you could choose any ability, and, like, it was kind of open world-ish, and, like, you could, you know, go different directions, and, mm-hmm. you know, you could, the world was, and it's like, every Bethesda game is like that now, and, like, it's just, like, silly to think about it now. Like, no, that, I mean, that might have been an innovation at the time, but if you're going to go back and play that game, the reason you're playing it is more because of the story or because of some of the weirdness of that experience that still has an appeal, but it's something that is not the sort of party line or whatever
right, right,
about that stuff.
Right. You're going to instead feel everything you can't do, not everything new that you can do, you know, like at the time. That even that the words sometimes used, that, you know, this is typical of those games or of Grand Theft Auto, this, you know, you can go anywhere, do anything. And it, you know, go actually just means a few verbs, and do certainly, like, you can do like five things, or you can do, you know, seven things. Like, I mean, it's just the language is so loose, and we understand it in the time, and then later on you go back and it's like, that doesn't make any sense. All I'm feeling are, you know, the limitations here.
Yeah. Can we go back to, just because I feel like we should get this out of the way, talking about the story of the game.
Yeah. That we have, how it, yes, okay. Absolutely. So do you want to describe the basic setup?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'll just say a little bit, and then you can say
more. No, sure.
So DreamWeb, the story is that you're this guy named Brian. It's sort of in this post-apocalyptic kind of setting, very Blade Runner influenced. Mm-hmm, also, mm-hmm. like, made me think of, like, David Cronenberg, like, Videodrome and mm-hmm. Scanners a little bit, those movies. I mean, the Blade Runner influence is pretty obvious, though, with the fact that it's almost always raining and, like, so you're this character named Ryan, who's kind of a loser, kind of a mysterious guy. Like, he's having these dreams. He's being taken to this thing called the Dream Web, where these, like, seven monks are there and saying that there are sort of demons that walk among us on Earth, and that they're trying to destroy this dream web, this thing which is, like, contains the dreams of all humankind. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, we could talk about even what the dream web. I think it's an open question throughout the game and afterwards, but
So the game is pretty vague about explaining a lot of things. It did come with a short story that was called Diary of a Madman, and it was written by this guy who is like a British author. His name is Stephen Marley.
Purports to be the diary of our main character before leading up to the events that we start playing.
Yeah, and it actually contains, like, hint things that you need to complete the game, so it was also kind of a weird copy production, an interesting, like, way of doing that. Of course, now doesn't matter. And the game is freeware online, so you can either just look at a YouTube playthrough, or you can find the PDF of the DreamWeb Diary of a Madman thing online.
When I downloaded it, it came kind of with it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It does come bundled. I just totally ignored it. But anyway, so what you do over the course of the game is basically you wake up in your girlfriend's apartment and she's like saying she's really worried about you, and you're like, oh, I'm still having these dreams. I don't know. I'm kind of like, my sanity's lapsing and all that kind of stuff. And which is described more in the diary, which is kind of like a prequel to it.
Right.
But then you kind of go out of her apartment. You just go back to your apartment, and you try and through a friend of yours, like through connections, sort of buy a gun so that you can. And then you find out who your first target is, who's this big pop singer. So you find out where he's staying, and then you sort of set it up so that you murder him and like his security guards, and then the game kind of keeps going on from there. Like after you murder somebody, this like orb kind of comes out of them, and the death scenes are like my favorite part of the game. Maybe they're like super gory and grisly, and like the animation really kind of, it's kind of like the part that makes me think the most of Hotline Miami, but it's a little bit almost more disturbing than that. And like this blue orb comes out and sucks you in, and then you kind of teleport into this dream web world, and these guys will tell you like who the next person is that you have to kill. And then eventually, so you kill like a military general by like dropping like a crane, like a TV crane on him
in the middle, like on live TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty great.
And each of these guys represents like a deadly sin or something. They're people who are, each one of them as a pop star and a general. They're each like representing both sins, and they're somehow like bringing, if they fulfill their plan according to the game, they're going to somehow collapse the dream web and like infect it in a way that these seven guardians are kind of standing against. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, eventually you kill some more people, and then you find the location of this church. And you go to this church, and there's a priest there who's like trying to, is very close to like ascending. I'm not really sure what that means, but and you discover him, but he's already ascended. He's attached to this weird fleshy like Lovecraft H.R. Giger type thing.
Right.
And then you find shortly after, you find the last character, which is kind of an interesting character. He's a serial killer. In the book, it doesn't mention this in the game, but in the book it refers to him as the dealer, and he's somebody who's been targeting people for a while and like killed like tons and tons of people, and at the end he like he attempts to kill you, and if you don't like move out of the room, which I didn't really understand this.
The first time he killed me.
If you don't move out of the, and then in, you just move, he lives right off the train track, so you just have him get hit by a train, and then that's the end of the game. And at the end of the game, the monk talks to you and says you have saved the dream web or whatever, and then you sort of walk outside in a building. There's a cop standoff, and you don't give yourself up, and they just murder you, and that's the end of the game.
Right. Did you ever see the actual death sequence if your character dies? I mean, so you said you got killed by the guy, but anytime you die in the game, it has a very like elaborate death scene where it says big money won. And all hope was lost, and millions burned in the fire. Like if there's something unreliable about the narrator here, it goes right through. It's shot through the entire game because the death, the death is kind of, you're the most important person in the world, and your death leads to to all of this.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, no, and I think that actually, I mean, there's consistency. Like it's, you could interpret it as the game is doing that. Because it never lets that off.
Right. So it creates this basic weird situation where you have, let's say you just read a madman, Diary of a Madman, the book that comes with it. It's 50 pages. And if you took that, you would have some questions about, this person,
not just their sanity, but their, you know, what is real and things like that. But the game plays fairly straight. I mean, you could say that there's a few things that maybe clue you in that is what's happening. Did you come away, like, when you got to the end then, and you're shot by the police? Did you read that as like a, you know, the tragic heroism of someone who's never understood? Or did it seem like a kind of like, you know, kind of undercutting what you had done? Is like you're just like a criminal? Like, how did you read that?
Oh, it just made me think like that your character is ultimately disposable.
Okay. So that reading would mean that we would take seriously kind of everything he's doing, sort of, right? Sort of like I guess I'm asking this because it was really, as I was playing it, and at first, once I got past the kind of like initial intrigue and the interface and the music, which I was into, combined with the diary, it just raised this whole, like, you know, specter of like this unreliable narrator in the game that I don't mean narrator isn't just like Ryan and what he's saying or what he's doing, but the whole game being shot through with that. When I died,
yeah,
and it had the most ridiculous ending of like, you know, the world was ruined because I didn't fulfill my mission. It just made me think about like what the difference is with unreliable narrators in other media versus like what is the difference? Is there a difference? Because when we play other games like Hotline Miami, I've only played half of it before I got bored and stopped playing it. But the half I played, I mean, it definitely, besides the look, it raises questions about, you know, who's calling you and whether this is all, you know, the hallucinatory aspects or, you know, what's driving, all this kind of stuff gets raised.
That game really shits the bed in terms of, like, where it goes with its story.
Oh, I never got to the end, so...
Yeah, it kind of has a cop-out ending.
Okay, well, but it raised this question, and I think you see it in other, like, bigger games that try to do something with this, like even, like, a BioShock, right, that tries to tell you not only has the quote-unquote narrator who you've been listening to unreliable, but you are not who you think you are, which of course, you know, as a player, it just raised all these sorts of questions about like, okay, there's tons of novels with unreliable narrators. Every narrator is in some way unreliable. There is, you know, film that works with this and what's the difference here? And I'm not sure what the difference is, but one of them feels like a tension with my, very limited in this game, but whatever agency a player has to do things and why they're doing it, and are you just going through the adventure game motions, or what, you know, you're conforming to whatever the world, like what it's allowing you to do, but it raised questions I didn't know how to answer that I found probably the most interesting aspects of the game, because you know, every game there's a tension in some ways between the player and a character you're either inhabiting or trying to be, or maybe you're claiming full ownership of, but it's not simple, the relationship. And you know, there's an even broader question maybe of, are players reliable, you know, in the way that we're, you know, using this term.
So I have a question.
Sure.
So if you could tell me what your most positive things about your experience playing the game was, and the most negative things about playing, just like a quick summary.
Sure. I mean, so overall, I didn't like it very much. And that was something that, like, once I got to the end and I kind of figured that out, I was kind of like, okay, this is interesting. Because I, you know, when we play old games, either playing something we already have an opinion about or something, you know, totally new and we're generous. And I want us to talk about kind of how we approach old games. I think it's a big question. For me here, the music absolutely was something I enjoyed throughout. Like I said, I like little things like the close-up thing. I played with that. It gave me a little room. I couldn't really do much. But because I liked the point of view, I liked being able to play with that. I was interested, not from a game perspective, because in the number of items there were. It gave the world, you know, that can go crazy in something like a Skyrim or something, where you have a billion items and they're everywhere. And it can go the other way in having very little. Here you had enough to feel like a surplus. And I was carrying around like my toothpaste and like deodorant for like most of the game, because I was maybe we'd need it. I didn't know what I needed. And it created the only moment of comedy in the game, which is I was in the dream web. I had to get that crystal off the wall, and I had no space. So I looked at my inventory. I had my deodorant still. I dropped my deodorant on the ground. And of course, the game remembers that. So every time I went through the dream web, my deodorant was on the ground. And it created this, like, you know, a kind of ridiculous, like, comedic moment. And I think games have, like, so much comedic potential that isn't quite, you know, kind of acknowledged, because there's just this, you know, if you give a little bit of agency and there's, you know, incongruity, but the dream web is such a solemn, serious, you know, space.
There's a comedic moment that happens after one of the murders.
Which one?
When you blow up the fuse in somebody's like boathouse and she gets blown in half, and then she begs you to kill her, and then like after you do, she's like apparently was on the phone, and the phone's like, "We're sorry, we could not leave your message."
right. And that was coming from I had forgotten about that. That's right. This was a weird, you know, comedic moment that I don't think the game intended, but for, you know, because I had to go to the dream web after every murder, I would pass by my deodorant. And it was this little, like, weird, you know, sign of, like, life in the game of unintentional deodorant in the dream web. So I like that. But most of the other stuff, you know, like the story, and it is, admittedly, it was hard for me to take seriously from the beginning, partly because of Ryan. Like, you know, the performance or whatever they do is so, like, blank, and at first it was kind of charming, like how lacking in affect and kind of blank it was, and I was trying to think, oh, okay, so he's like having all these bad dreams and maybe this is, you know, this is all on purpose. But I don't know, as it kept going, I didn't had a hard time believing it in a way.
So
by the end I was just kind of like, you know, using the walkthrough more and more, and kind of like, I don't know, just glad it wasn't super long.
But I don't think that the game is actually written that well. I don't think that the writing is that good in the game. Like,
no.
I think like the narrative and the story and the background and some of the storytelling is good, but I don't think that the writing and especially like the voiceover and stuff is very good at all.
Yeah. And so that contributes as well. I think maybe the whole, I kept asking myself, like, why am I playing Ryan? Like, what's the interest here? Like, what's this, you know, the story? Like, what's the point of playing someone who is either deluded on this level or is to be taken seriously in a world that is, you know, the writing doesn't quite prop up the the narrative. And I get this feeling, and I think we can talk about this too, and how it kind of invokes its cyberpunk atmosphere and tropes and stuff like that, whether it does that well or not, because to me it was failing, because it gave just this overwhelming feeling of kind of one of those, it was like that childish fantasy of being the only person who's right in a world gone wrong, you know, that
but I don't think the game wants you to empathize with him. I mean, I don't know, admittedly, but he's kind of a loser, and I think the game like makes it pretty clear that he's a loser.
Yeah, but being a loser doesn't, I would tend to sympathize with that. And I'm saying, so it doesn't make him more heroic, but it makes him one of those, you know, characters like in the new Ghostbusters, you know, like the villain there who, you saw that.
He did remind me a lot of that.
Yeah. And I thought the new Ghostbusters was great. And I really, that kind of character who is, you know, going to show the world how right he is, and they're going to finally bow down. And, you know, I mean, it's a common, like white male fantasy, but, so anyway, in here, I think there's enough room between the Madman's Diary and some of the weirdness going on in the game. There's definitely room for other interpretations. But the whole game is playing writing the world gone wrong. So at some point it comes to me where I have to, if there's not another lot of other texture or other stuff going on in the game, I try to take seriously, okay, what am I doing from beginning to end of this game? And is that something both interesting, or is it doing something interesting. And I guess I just, with all the little, with all the space for ambiguity aside, well, there, I just left unconvinced that it was doing something like that. Did you feel very differently?
I disagree with that. I would say that, well, first of all, like, if we're talking about cyberpunk, I think the background, some of the background for cyberpunk, admittedly, I'm not, like, knowledgeable about the entire genre and all of its origins and everything. But, like, the thing with sci-fi, I was watching an old interview with this this guy, Alan Vega, who is the lead singer of punk band Suicide, who just died, like, a week ago or two. And he was saying that he loved science fiction because he feels like everything that is written about in science fiction comes true in a certain way in society, like way later on. Like there is in some way, shape or form, there is like a predictive element to sci-fi that it's a lot more like, in some way it's a lot more accurate to reality than a lot of other things. Mm. But the thing with a lot of cyberpunk and something like Blade Runner is it's coming from the backdrop of like, it also makes me think of Taxi Driver, which is not cyberpunk, but
yeah, that's a good comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. Like crime, like in infrastructure sort of in the 70s and the 80s, especially in urban centers because of like white flight and a lot of other things like that in the US at least, that urban infrastructure was decaying. The crime rate soared like really high. Like the crime rate is actually much lower now, in spite of all the crazy things happening in the U.S. and the world. So I think that sense of like that decaying city and needing to be tamed or there needing to be this kind of savior that comes out of this like. Mm-hmm. Depression comes from those like real world things that were happening, and that does kind of form the backdrop of the game. Like in the game, there is high crime rates. Like people are generally surly. Like it is also this futuristic world, but I think it is like reflective of the attitudes of that time. But as far as like the story, I would say that I think that the Diary of the Madman, I liked that it brought more into the story and there were some cool things about it, but I actually think that that was probably the weakest part because the strongest thing about the game is not the writing or the character Mm-mm. background Mm-mm. or listening to like the character talk about how he loves his girlfriend or whatever, yeah. Because it isn't convincing. It's not convincing. Uh-huh. But if you throw that stuff aside, which is admittedly pretty hard, then the interesting thing is that you're this character who's kind of like mysterious, kind of a loser, and doesn't really have good reasons for doing things, who hasn't even like ever owned a gun before, but has decided that he needs to do this for some reason. Then it totally fits the profile of like someone who would be in that situation. There's something kind of like prescient about that side of it, and I think the game should have pushed stronger on that side of being even more ambiguous, not trying to provide a background. And I think it would have worked better. But like again, it's the kind of thing of like you need somebody with a clear perspective and a clear sort of vision for the game, and I think they wanted to do something that was edgy and dark. But the thing about games is they're so often like made by a group, so there are some elements of like, oh okay, I'm gonna write the backstory, I'm gonna do this, like oh this character is struggling, but then oh we're gonna have this other element, and it's oh those two things actually don't really fit well together, like this character isn't that interesting, like.
So do you mean that you find like what it's trying to do of giving kind of a portrait of a certain kind of guy or mindset in a world with recognizable though like taken to a further down the road kind of degree, that as a portrait of that it works or something?
I think it has interesting things to say about the sort of like trying to find a way to describe it. Well, like the way that the character, you don't really understand his motivation. It is mysterious, and it's something weirdly mystical. I think there's something like that resonated with me about that. And there's a lot of like sort of body horror elements. There are elements of escaping reality and teleporting and ending up in different places. And like that dimension of like, you're not really in reality. You're kind of dissociated into this weird dream space. Like, he's not really occupying this reality. There's some other thing that exists. I found all that, the way that it depicted all that, like, really interesting, and like I just don't see parallels to that in almost any games that I can think of, like, as far as that element of it.
I can't either. I mean, I'm trying to think right now as you're saying that of others that try to do a similar thing. And if I had played it in 94, given what else I was playing, I mean, I think at 94 I was like playing a lot of like Sonic CD and Lunar and Landstalker, like a bunch of Genesis stuff, and like, and it would have stuck out to me. But it raises a question of, you know, again, how we approach these older games. When I play it now, those things, yeah, they seem a little unique for games, maybe especially at the time. Like, I don't know the genre from the time well enough to speak to that, but it feels that way. It just feels like a really unsuccessful attempt at those things. That the interesting stuff is interestingly kind of explored maybe elsewhere, or.
I just see it. So this is why I get like passionate about this particular point, because this and like Vangers, which is the other game that I suggested that we play, but is fairly unplayable, but is, I'd say, in some ways like more interesting than this game, other ways maybe less interesting. But it's a Russian game from 1998. You can play it on Steam now. It's been updated and all that stuff. Anyway, the problem is there's always like interest behind deciding what we talk about, what is normal, what is like, you know, what is good, what is like, what is an approachable good experience. Mm-hmm. And like, it depends on culture and society. Sure. And all that kind of stuff. And the thing is, like, most new games that we play now, like this new Uncharted, people are going to say that it sucks in 10 years. People are going to say it sucks. Like, for the probably.
They should be saying it now, but yes, you're right.
Yeah. Like, so, like, when you're playing with games, like, a lot of times, like, if you're looking for really artistic intentions, especially within this commercial framework, you're going to be playing with scraps. You have to kind of take bits and pieces and try and find something there that's interesting about that experience. And I think my biggest frustration is people go back in time and they say, like, oh, Mario, that's something that's aged well. But the thing, and Mario is a brilliant in terms of design and like, you know, some of those old Nintendo games, but they take no chances artistically. They don't. And if you have that expectation that games are supposed to do that, and that any other game that tries to be more complicated artistically, which is another side of the coin, which to me is equally as important, if you're going to say that is, like, you know, shouldn't be talked about, it shouldn't be, like, there isn't something there that is not worth exploring, that is dated, I think there are interests in deciding that design side is more important to resurrect and say that that's important, especially when, like, it was a massive commercial success and everyone loved it, versus, like, this other game that no one talks about, that very few, that, you know, probably has, like, a little bit of a cult following, but very few people talk about, that is doing these artistically interesting things but fails in terms of the design. It's two different sides of a coin, but I think that they're both equally important, and people within video games are much more likely to pick and defend the things that don't take any chances artistically and that don't and that are backed by larger corporations, or that there are somehow influenced or intermeshed with the culture in a way that it feeds us narratives that we like, the positive narratives about ourselves, things that we like to hear instead of things that we maybe should be hearing. Right. So like to put the onus on like that game, which admittedly has a lot of bullshit in it, I think is unfair. Is what I'm saying. And a lot of old games that are obscure that people don't talk about anymore. Because a lot of there are a lot of buried treasures inside those that if you're looking for this full-blown, blow-me-away, change-my-mind experience, you're not going to find it. But if you're looking for, man, maybe there was something else. Like, video games don't just have to be this, like, GTA and Uncharted and this certain things. Then maybe you will find some of that there. And I think that's the side of the discussion that I feel really passionate about because of the way that people ignore that.
Well, I think I would agree with you that that is completely ignored because people are so obsessed with these timeless classics, as they might call them, when games do not have timeless classics. Like, there's no such... there's many reasons for this, but the kind of things that they would focus on to talk about why Mario persists or things like that. These games, there's an ability to even access them. That's one thing. I don't mean just mean technological, but I mean being able to, like, people aren't replaying the original Super Mario Brothers very much, despite all of it, you know, like the good things they could say about it.
I think people are because they keep re-releasing it.
That's it. That, yeah, I mean, they're trying to make you do that, but of their own will, people outside of those who have a nostalgic attachment to it or an academic curiosity in it are going to find themselves hard pressed to deal with the base difficulty of Super Mario Brothers. So there's many things in, you know, older games, whether it's interface or conventions at the time or difficulty, quote unquote, and that we can read that a few different ways. Avengers, which you're talking about, I really wanted us to talk about it because I loved how it looked. I actually thought its story was fascinating. Fascinating. It has that whole setup of telling you you're essentially stuck in this middle position. The home world and the destination world are cut off. Generations are going by, and you are stuck in this weird middle position that is really what the game seems to be really about, besides the car RPG stuff. But I mean, it seems really intent on exploring that, and I wanted to be able to play that because it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that we couldn't get very far. That said, I think
I had the same problem with that game, and there's a sort of a background that I've read. That game was fairly popular in Russia, partly because it spoke very well to the post-Soviet Russian consciousness of, like, you know, we were born under communism, we were raised under communism, but now we have to change our, like, modes and values and, like, to find something new and completely different. And there's that kind of just, like alienness to it that I think that game is speaking to.
Mm-hmm. The alienness is profound in a way that I'd like us to eventually, we'll get to this, but talk about our kind of aesthetic, maybe what we're drawn to, but that the alienness of that game, man, it was the biggest draw, and it was ultimately what also, like, probably I couldn't penetrate, but it was, man, it was very powerful in a way that I don't think there's a distance, there's a 22 year remove from this game, but it's not alien, in that way. But I guess I would just say that what you're describing to me about finding those, maybe hidden gems, but also, games that have unappreciated parts, that are ignored at the time, maybe rediscovered. I really want to find that too. At the same time, I feel like when approaching an older game, that something with interesting artistic intentions must be allowed to fail at those. And on a personal level, just like in my own interaction with the game, I don't find it having particularly, I don't know, deep or interesting, or even, like, I don't know, I don't find that it's that, it has tons of stuff to offer up. And that's okay. I guess I feel that if a game Like, I guess what worries me is that in looking for the what's not being talked about in these games that, you know, very few people have heard of, that there is still a kind of celebratory mindset of playing it to look for that rather than to play it to see what's up. Like, for instance, 2 years ago, I tried to play Police.
What's wrong with that, though?
Well, to be honest, it's not that there's anything wrong with it, but I don't find it, like, super far removed from the celebratory mindset that infects all of gaming. All. Like, I find that you can celebrate different things, but to me, I'm not sure how you square that with an ability to even look critically at past games. Like,
I don't think you necessarily should celebrate these things as much as acknowledge that they exist. And what very few people acknowledge that they even exist. And that's the thing. Like, I want, if something exists in history, if somebody was trying to do something, even if they failed, I want to know about that.
Sure.
Because
sure.
I can relate to that. I can connect with that.
Does the judgment that, personal judgment in playing it, that it failed, does it ruin that appreciating those things?
I don't think that it failed. I think that there's a lot of cool stuff in there, and I think if the game were remade without it being a point-and-click adventure game, like, I think if the base story and the base way that it's being told and even the visual and artistic style were kept the same and the design was smoothed out and some other things were, I think that game would be totally successful.
Really? So what can you just... I mean, this is very far from my experience. I'm glad for that, though, because I, you know, what do you feel like would be, what succeeds about it that it strikes you so strongly now, like playing it 22 years later? What speaks to you in the game that doesn't to me?
The connection of the body horror and the cyberpunk, the way that the animations, the kind of like distanced or like it almost feels like the top-down perspective almost feels like you're looking over, like, kind of clinically, like looking mm-hmm. over the mm-hmm. environment, like mm-hmm. you're detached from it. There's a lack of color from that, and I think that that actually is really good way of kind of that depiction kind of says something about, like, you're not exactly seeing what's actually going on here. Mm-hmm. There's a level of, like, something that exists behind the curtain. And that's great. Like, I think that things... I mean, you like Problematic, obviously. That game is all about, like, things that you imagine that something could be, but you don't actually know if they're...
Right.
They are exactly. Right. And I really like that element of it. And I really like the combination between the sort of dystopian futuristic body horror and also, dystopian futuristic cyberpunk and body horror. The way that I really like the way that the game sort of breaks with its own point and click format for the violence scenes, like in a way that's very jarring and kind of much more violent than you would expect. There's something like disturbing about that that I really like. I like the way that some things are framed, like in the game, as far as like especially like those like violent scenes. I think they're like, once the game gets out of its initial like introduction, like where you're not doing very much, like I think it definitely gets a lot stronger. I really like the way that, like, when you kill somebody, like, it immediately sends you back. It doesn't, like, there's no sort, it immediately sends you into the dream web. Mm-hmm. There's no sort of like there's no escape from that. There's no like it kind of centers the fact that this is what the game is about, and it breaks with its own kind of need to keep with some sort of sense of realism there, which I really like. I like that it doesn't try and, you know, make you like the character necessarily. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I think there are a lot of really interesting things about that game, and if you look at other point-click point-and-click adventure games at the time or a lot of other stuff, you're not going to find those things necessarily that much. So I like all those things. And like if that game with a story like that and depicted sort of the way that it is was remade for modern audiences and took away a lot of the point-and-click elements, maybe added something that was like better design-wise, then I think it would be totally successful.
It's hard for me to imagine it updated or to take away some of the perspective you're talking about, which continues to be, like, when I think back on it, then one of the most interesting aspects I guess they would preserve. When I try to imagine it, I guess it's harder for me to see because I don't feel like the choices are sometimes interesting. I guess I don't disagree with that. I just find the whole of it, like those choices add up to kind of nothing to me. Like there's...
Why do they add up to nothing for you?
Because in the end, I am going through a weirdly conservative fantasy of justice in a world of social, economic, like technological evil, by its terms, you know, with its dream, seven deadly sins and all that. But that is ultimately, I don't see much of anything insightful, but I guess I would say anything that feels really bracing or true about that. Like the setting, some of the things that bring
maybe some of our worldviews are different.
Sure, but of course they would be. Of course they would be. That's what, you know, when bringing and, you know, encountering art.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
So the thing is, like, I don't even see the game that way. I think our way of looking at it is different because, like, I don't think that the character's like actions are necessarily justified. I think that he thinks that they're justified, and I don't think that the game thinks that. I don't know what the game thinks, but my own interpretation is like, I don't know. There's an ambiguity there. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what exactly it's saying, but it's something that I can try and unpack and think about. It's offering me like a new way of like looking at this this thing of like this, like there are, somebody is paranoid. This person is deeply paranoid, but the things that he's paranoid about also exist, and maybe the way that, to some extent, in some way in real world, like people who are paranoid schizophrenic or whatever, they're paranoid about a lot of things that on their face are not true, but yet there is an element of truth to a lot of it.
Right.
And it is sort of giving us an insight into the world that we're not seeing with these normal eyes of like, oh, everything is okay. You know, there's a sense of stability to the world when actually there is all this like chaos and underneath that. So like, and there are many different ways that you can look at it, but I think,
I would agree with you that on all of that, except I just don't think the game has anything insightful to say about that. I don't think there's anything radical about what it's trying to reveal in its parent. I mean, to me, we've already said ambiguity is the most interesting aspect of it to me. But either way that I read the ambiguity, it is not piercing through any sort of veil.
I guess I just don't agree with that.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I don't think that it's completely successful, but I think that it's doing something.
Those somethings, your somethings may be different, but it seems to be rehashing some very familiar kind of cyberpunk, like noir, like 101, like stuff. Like, it seems like... Like it hasn't pushed any of those like basic tenets of the genre or of the setup anywhere. Like they just seem like they're kind of a given. And the dream web itself, I mean, this is like, you know, when I started it and you start with that voice and the monk is talking to you and really pulling you in, I found that with the music especially, very powerful and very kind of like, okay, like, the name, like, Dreamweb, like, it's not just suggestive as the game is trying to, like, you know, put out some sort of, like, it's like a, it's both a collective unconscious, it's something that's, you know, technologically connected, and the very idea of a dream logic is suggestive in it, in the way that the game kind of cuts between things. I mean, I think that dream logic, broadly speaking, is one of the probably best ways to understand how games work. So I'm kind of there at the beginning.
Yeah, but so it doesn't make sense to me how you're saying that it seems very rote, very cyberpunk, but then you're also acknowledging that this stuff is not rote.
Right, so but this is the premise, right? So I'm saying all this at the beginning, and I don't think it does anything with that. I think that it goes nowhere. I think it's a game with an interesting premise and an interesting kind of suggestion about its world that then goes through a number of killing, don't get me wrong, I don't have a problem with him killing people, but going through this, knocking out, you know, one by one these different people, and then we go to the dream web each time, and that's why I bring up, like, my deodorant, because, like, the dream web became not only less mysterious each time, but the game had nothing else to, like, it was all there in the first 30 minutes.
Is that a problem?
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, I think it's a problem.
I feel like you're looking for the game to reach a conclusion for you.
Oh, no. No conclusion. Just more than a premise. Like, I'm playing the game, you know? I'm not just reading a synopsis at the beginning. I'm not just watching an introductory scene. I'm playing the game. Why am I playing this?
Why does it need to do more than the setup? I feel like the game actually knows what it's good at doing and focuses on that and doesn't try and go beyond that because it knows that it can't do that.
Why can't it? Why? What do you mean it can't do that?
The scenes where you go and murder people and then you go back to the dream web, like, I mean, like, you are completing something that is already set out for you. Like, there is a sense of, like, I already know what's going to happen when it began, so you're kind of carrying it out. So why would that experience need to be more than the setup? Because that is exactly what it is, you know?
Maybe I don't understand what you're suggesting about that.
I guess a movie like Inland Empire or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it dives deep into subconscious and deals with multiple layers of reality and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's great. This game doesn't do that. And that's, like, okay to me because, like, because of the way that it sets it up, like, and yes, I would like a more deep and metaphysical kind of study on humanity, and I would like there to be more dimensions added to the story. But as far as, like, fitting within the internal reality of the world and what is set up for me, I am reasonably satisfied with that. And I'm reasonably satisfied with reaching my own conclusions after I've played it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if I went into every game, you know, expecting Inland Empire, I'd be sorely disappointed. So I don't have any of that expectation. And I also don't have a problem with afterwards. Like, a game that would end too conclusively would be, I don't know, super, super boring. But the ambiguity that I'm thinking about afterwards, for me, which was, like, kind of relating the diary of a madman to the game and how to understand them in light of each other, even though I don't find the diary on its own, like, super interesting, it was like it didn't activate and give me things to chew on or really even kind of just dwell with afterwards. Like, that absolutely wasn't my experience. So,
the game or the diary?
The game.
Oh, okay. Well, had different experiences. Sure.
I mean, I have no problem with that. I really, for me, one of the challenges of even approaching an old game like this is how to approach it, how to approach a game from 1994, you know, and not just like, okay, well, what if I played it in 1994? I was in high school and I, you know, was listening to a lot of Under the Pink and, like, you know, I'm trying to think about the kind of touchstones of that year for me that weren't games even. I have no idea. I mean, but to look at
it. I was very young at that time.
Oh, were you? Okay. I think that for me, I want to approach this broader question of how to approach older games. Do you have, I mean, you've explained a little bit about finding this value in these games that is certainly overlooked or forgotten. Is that a more general approach that you take to all older games that you play, whether you've played them before or not? Or is it, do you approach it in an appreciative, like, looking for that? Or how do you approach it?
I try and look up just like YouTube playthroughs and stuff, a variety of different stuff. And the stuff that I actually am like going to sit down and play, which is a lot smaller percentage,
sure,
is things
sure.
that I know that I'm probably going to get enough out of the experience to where, okay, this is probably going to be something kind of interesting to me. So I'll do this because, you know, I don't know. Like, it's stressful for me to play games in general, and I want something that's going to be a experience that I, you know, is worth it.
Sure.
I guess, like, I think that most older games, a lot are not very well designed. Like, there's a lot of, if we're just talking about the design aspect, like there are certain things, certain annoyances, like especially if you're used to playing games that have more smooth design, that is just like are hard to deal with if you're not used to them. But it is sometimes, like, I guess to go back and forth, sometimes it is a matter of just literacy, because mm-hmm. like games are all about literacy, and different kinds of games require different kinds of literacy, and tons of people like art turn-based RPGs, mm-hmm, tons of people like mm-hmm. roguelikes, tons of people like real-time strategies. I find those games impenetrable, but they're like, you know, but there's like a whole huge subset and genre of within it, and presumably it's because they are rewarding to some extent, you know, when you get into them and when you play them, and
it
develops and all that kind of stuff. So you're always like taking a chance with that. But like, as far as like a lot of old games, yeah, no, I think they would be, I don't think that they should be repeated. I don't think that someone should try and repeat the way that, and this is the problem that I have with nostalgia stuff, is nostalgia is never really the same. Like, and I don't think that repeating a lot of the mistakes of the past just because they were popular or because people got used to them or whatever is really worthwhile.
Right.
Point and click adventure went out of vogue, but there are, you know, adventure games, some point and click now on Steam, and they are, you know, varying degrees of interesting, but there is interesting stuff out there. But I don't think the past should be repeated, but I do think that like there is so much stuff out there that if you're really trying to look for something to bring forward as like, you know, how is this going to be an example so that we can push forward into something else, something that brings out new possibilities of something that you can do within that medium, then it is really important to look at a lot of older games. And maybe you can't get a lot out of them. You can't, I don't know, there things like Doom or whatever that is like, you know, once you play it a little bit, is actually really well designed, and the mechanics of it are well designed, and you can save anywhere in Doom. And there's a few things like the key doors are kind of stupid, and like, you know, hitting switches that open somewhere on the other side of the level is stupid. But like, outside of that, it's fairly easy to approach in comparison to a lot of things. But those things are kind of an anomaly. So I don't know. I don't think the past should be repeated, and I don't think that like these old games should be repeated or fetishized. But at the same time, like, I think, if you're going to bring forth something in that represents like a new possibility, a new way of sort of looking at things or whatever, then it is important to go back and play stuff and go in with that mindset of like, you know, I'm not going to get that same experience playing Doom or whatever, but sure. I might get something else that I'm not thinking about that, you know, like maybe it's not in my internal list of things I value in my head, but maybe it actually, maybe there's an aspect of it that meets with that and I'm just not being open enough to it, and once you open yourself up to that, maybe there's something there. A lot of times there isn't, but sometimes there is, you know.
Right. So in opening yourself up to that past game, is it a fair question for you to ask, do I like it? And that the answer to that being no, or even the thought like I don't think this is good, that's still a part of like the whole thing, right?
Well, I try to look at it as, do I like aspects of it? Do I like these? Like, do I like this part? Do I not like this part? You know, mm-hmm. like, because I think, I don't know. I see things. I guess I'm very, maybe it's just me taking an artistic approach, being an artist, whatever. Like, I try and break things apart into their pieces because I think things are often a complicated and conflicting assemblage of pieces. Yeah. And oftentimes, yeah. like, there are a lot of elements of, like, I'll listen to music, you know, and I'll find some really elements of it that I like and some that I don't. And, you know, overall, I could come up with a conclusion that I say I like or don't like this, but in the end, that really doesn't matter to me. What I'm interested in is like I started listening to Kanye West or, you know, recently, mm-hmm. and like, of course I don't like that there's a lot of misogyny in his music, mm-hmm. or that he's obsessed with his own celebrity or mm-hmm. all this other stuff. But on the other hand, there's all this amazing, really interesting production sure. and arrangements and stuff. So can I say, do I like this or not? I don't know. I don't know. I can say I like elements of that. I like elements of this. Can I say that I felt more enriched after I heard it? Yes, I did.
Sure.
But I don't know if I could say, do I like it or not? You know, it's not that simple of a question for me.
Mm. Well, I think it's actually a pretty hard, in some ways it's a simple question to ask, right? It's guttural, it's instinctive to some people. It's sometimes the first thing you could say. I don't think it has to be that way. I think that, if you're describing like trying to break something into pieces, my kind of analytic nature does that pretty, like almost too willingly. For me, the challenge is to put it back together and to see what I think. And for me, it's an artistic enterprise as well. As a writer, I'm constantly looking, certainly at older pieces of writing, but in any art form, how all those pieces work off of each other, how you know these brilliant sonic things and misogyny would work in Kanye, but trying to put that back together because I find it really challenging, and not necessarily just I like it or I don't, but also really as a writer. One of the fundamental challenges of finding a form for putting sentences together or putting together a whole work and trying to have a beginning and an end and things like that, that it's exhausting, frankly. Like it's, but also I feel like it's something that a lot of it's exhausting because it's really hard and I can love a piece of work. Let's say, I mean, for an example, I watched, you know, Breaking Bad for a while, and thought it was a truly amazing show. And I think the last episode is horrific and like a complete fan service. And it matters to me. So that when I'm trying to put it all together, and the last episode, right? I mean, it's just the last episode, right? But what does it really matter? But a lot of my favorite things, the things that really speak to me the strongest, don't drop the ending. They certainly don't give fan service in the very last episode when they haven't really been about that. And so it's not like I come together and be like, oh, it sucks, because obviously it doesn't. It's really complicated for me to put together all that I love about the show with a fan service ending. And it makes me sad because, you know, I wanted it to not have a fan service ending. It doesn't ruin it. But that kind of holistic kind of bringing together and bringing that together in me, right? So that the question of why do I like this or do I is a question about myself and about the things that value that I value. And for me to be able to ask that is to be able to say, well, maybe know my own aesthetic tastes or my own values, what I'm going for a bit better. But it's also just really hard. So when I'm looking at some of these older games, I agree with the, like, nostalgia is so prevalent and so crazy. It's hard to kind of know even what to do. Sometimes I see these really sharp, like, writers online or game critics, and they're like just recently talking about that show Stranger Things. You've probably seen tweets about it. And it is not good, but it is also just like it is a like nostalgia 80s like fan service like extravaganza. And I watched it, and I like I said, I don't think it's hardly anything, and it's not that I don't appreciate the parts, but they come together to me in a way that is not only ultimately a little empty, but also one that all of that nostalgic fan service is more overwhelming to me than some of the sweet characters or, you know, some of the...
Can I go back to something for a second?
Of course, sure.
So I think this is a problem that I have with criticism in general. Mm-hmm. is there's often a need to kind of forward certain things, to put things in tiers, how much does this contain that I think is great, and let me put that in that tier, and okay, how much, what does this do? This does a lot of good things, but it screwed up at the end, so I'll put that in that tier, and then I find that kind of stuff functionally useless to me because what I want, when I write about games or anything, what I want is to say, like, okay, here's a bunch of pieces of a thing. This is like what this thing might represent. This is what this thing might represent. Draw your own conclusions from that, you know? And I don't know, like, when I, like, list favorites or, you know, put, like, my, like, let's say, here's my favorite list of favorite albums from 2015 or whatever. Uh-huh. Those, I like, for me, those are just personal preferences because I know that there are so many aspects that my perspective might be important in some ways, but I also know that there are so many aspects of reality and so many things. My vision of what is out there and awareness is limited by whatever I'm around, whatever I'm able to find, whatever my certain priorities or personal tastes are. And so I acknowledge that, and I'm like, for me, like, it's important to not try and create, like, a sense that there is this kind of, like, universal reality, that some things are, that there is this, things are universally better than others, because I find that to be not true in reality.
I find it to not be true either, but I also, like, would like to know, you know, your reality. So, like, I don't think that people who would read your list of favorites, if they're familiar with your work at all, it's to be like, oh my God, like, Liz is, like, you know, saying what's what, and, like, you know, putting her foot down, really just, you know, I don't read you that way. But I'm also really interested in your perspective, why you love the albums you do, why you love the games you do. And yes, it speaks to your preferences, but your preferences inform, you know, everything you make, right? The games you make, the music you make. And so I don't know. I don't find that, I mean, to be honest, I encounter this a lot. I find a general resistance in criticism to that basic statement of saying, I think this is bad, which can be a really humble statement. You know, it doesn't have to be a you know, this world defining sort of, certainly nothing objective about it. But to say, I don't like this, and here's why, and here's what I value and don't find in it or do find in it, I find that just something that is not only valuable to me personally, but I seek it in others. And I find that I can't even understand some of the things they say until I know kind of where they're coming from, you know?
And for me, like, that's also something that's important for me. Like, I often have sometimes very strong emotional visceral reactions.
Oh, me too.
And oftentimes there are certain things where someone's like, where a lot of people are like, oh, I really like this. And I'm like, I don't like that thing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, why don't you like it? And I was like, I don't know. There's just things about it that, you know, and like I try and express myself, but it's ultimately futile until I kind of like sit down and think about it and try and write it out or whatever. Sure. And so, yeah, that is very important to me, too. And sometimes, you know, on my Twitter, I'll go off and be like, you know, I feel like so many people are valuing this right now, and I wish that more people would value this thing or whatever. And so I certainly have my own sense of priorities and what's important, but I don't know, like, I know that I have a limited scope of that to some degree. Like, there's, you know, I know that, like, in some ways that is going to only represent one vision of the world or whatever, but I guess, like...
Isn't that good enough? Like, you know, I mean, like, isn't that... I mean, it's obviously true, so isn't, like, it feels like the awareness of everything you don't know, which, you know, frankly oppresses me on a daily basis. So, you know, that awareness, part of me trying to, I guess, push back against it a little bit is to not let that inhibit, you know, making limited statements of my own experience, because if I think they're valuable in others, and I do, when I see them, I'm like, yes. It can be hard sometimes to push forth myself and to do that. And yet, I frankly, the longer I've been in the game criticism space, the more I felt compelled to, I feel the pressure to not say simple things like, I think this is bad, I think this is good, but it very, you know, to even offer the most basic, and to be honest, I don't usually say things offhand. I'm too uncomfortable on social media to say much without thinking about it quite a bit. But even then, I just find it really, like, central sort of to put that out there and go from there. And you know, it's not a conversation ender, though I'm not really always interested in a Twitter conversation. But yeah. But it's also, you know, not something that, I guess I just feel this whole tension in the critical community about making those kind of statements. And to me, it just inhibits honesty. You know, I think you've said something about, you know, art and kind of declaring war on yourself, right? And your values. And that mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense to me, because even figuring out why I, you know, hated Uncharted 4 or hated Dark Souls 3 or, you know, have loved, you know, Kentucky Route Zero or Panoramical or, yeah, those are revealing things for me, but also something where I kind of start from and not where I end, you know, like, you know, I just, it's that judgment. I feel like there's a real resistance and criticism to any kind of judgment. And part of me gets it and part of me remains baffled by something that is in some sense the most natural thing in the world, arguing about taste, but also something that seems so loaded with, you know, authority problems, just all this stuff that, like, I don't like either, but I don't want it to inhibit honesty on my part or on others. And I feel like socially it does. Well, is there anything else about DreamWeb or anything related you'd like to talk about before we go?
I feel like we touched on most everything. I mean, like, you know, like I said, the game is free online. Mm-hmm. It's ScumVM. Just Google DreamWeb ScumVM or DreamWeb Freeware or something like that. And that's one reason why I also chose it, so anyone listening can just download it and, you know, run it. You have to run it in DOSBox. But just decide for yourself. Or, you know, there are long playthroughs online you can watch and see what you think. And it would be great if there, you know, if there's more people... I totally invite more people to join the conversation about this game or related things.
Sure. I'm sorry, go ahead. I mean,
No, that's basically all I was going to say. Okay. Yeah.
Well, believe me, even though I didn't, like it that much, I'm very glad to play it, and I get a lot of value out of things, whether I like them or not. And especially some of the moments I remember, but also just it really made me think a little bit differently about unreliable narrators. And that's kind of an unfinished thought for me. It's something that I want to think a little bit more about beyond, just fairly uninteresting BioShock and Hotline Miami examples. So I take a lot of value from that. And to be honest, I'm really glad that we could disagree about it. I value not only disagreement, but value talking about it. And I have not had a ton of disagreement yet with the games I've talked about so far on here. So, I really appreciate you being willing to talk through it with me. Share what you felt.
I also tried to pick with this and Vander's a slightly more contentious examples, just because I know that they would inspire more discussion about it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I really wish that Vander's had worked out, because what I liked about it, man, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that game is on Steam for anyone who wants to check it out.
Right, right. Yeah.
But yeah, no, and... was the other thing I was going to say. As far as unreliable narrators, I mean, I think, that's obviously a conversation for another time. But the one thing I would say about that is the thing that I like about unreliable narrators is it kind of takes off the authoritative voice, it kind of takes you away from a cultural kind of normative voice and into something else that is more subjective. It takes away from a kind of sense of objective into the subjective. And I think that's a shift that's really interesting and worth talking about another time.
Yeah. Because once you begin to think about unreliable narrators, it's not something that just, this book clearly has one and this one clearly is reliable. It begins to infect everything, and you can't think about narrators, the first time you encounter an unreliable narrator, whatever age or circumstance. It's something that, it's fairly straightforward. It's a person talking and we're all unreliable, and yet it's very easy to lose sight of in the whatever authority the work purports to have, and just kind of, carries with it that weight.
Yeah, but it brings us into thinking about art and thinking about things from a different angle, which is why I like that kind of trope. I mean, when it's done actually decently and not in the BioShock way, but that's all I was going to say about that. And that's one of the reasons why I brought this up. And one of my favorite examples of that in games is this Doom WAD that's called Alt. That I talked about in my Doom mixtape video series.
What is that?
And it's a Russian Doom mod, made in 2012, and it has a narrative, and it's basically an unreliable narrator story. I won't go into it too much. It's not that important, but the way that the worlds are designed kind of reflects that unreliable narrator story, and the story itself is kind of interesting, but not that complicated, but it's the way that it's kind of captured in the world that adds an interesting dimension into thinking about everything around the game, which is why I like it. But anyway, that's something you can listen to me talk more about that. If you look up those videos, especially the video, it'll say in the description, the ones where I talk about Alt, but yeah.
Okay. I'll check that out, because I'm actually interested in a narrator that just wouldn't simply, narrate, talk, but the whole game, and I think Dreamweb suggests this, is shot through with this perspective that is not it's not a clear division between narrator and world or anything like that, that there's just a complete interpenetration and sort of the world unfurling, from which games are really good at. They're really just, they're really good at positing worlds, and then so much of our playing is not really even questioned the basic premise of that, and just kind of, you know, we go on about our way. But that sounds fascinating, so I'll look that up. Thanks.
Yeah, but anyway, that's all I was going to say about that. And yeah, so that's it for me.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with me.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, and I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about this.
Yeah, me too.